what is happiness? This is a subject that is very rarely discussed, even in some of the sermons that you often listen to. And when we speak about what is good and what is bad, the Buddha always said, whatever leads to happiness is what is good, and whatever leads to unhappiness is what is bad. Very often in the West, people think that going after happiness is not good. So to be good is to give up happiness. That is the Western way of thinking. Now, there had been philosophers who have been saying this, that the purpose of life is to be happy, enjoy. And that is called hedonism. And hedonism means people begin to think that it is bad to be hedonistic. But the Buddha's way of talking about this is to say that it is good to be happy. And whole purpose of the teaching of the Buddha is to find happiness and to give up unhappiness, dukkha. To be free from dukkha means to be free from unhappiness. But the problem is we have to distinguish between two things. Happiness and pleasure. This is not the same thing. There is a difference between happiness and pleasure. Pleasure means stimulating the senses. Now, if we see beautiful things with our eyes, that is pleasure. If we listen to pleasant music, that is pleasure. If we smell pleasant perfumes, that is also pleasure. If we taste tasty food, that is pleasure. If we touch pleasant things and touches, feel the touch, that is also pleasure. So, pleasure is different from happiness. If we go after pleasure, we become unhappy. That's what the Buddha pointed out. Because pleasure is something that is impermanent. Impermanent. Now, supposing we listen to some pleasant music, we might like that pleasant music. We might enjoy that. But if we keep on listening to that same music throughout the day, and the next day also, and the next day, what happens? It ceases to be pleasure. It becomes a nuisance. We want to stop that. That means the same pleasure can become painful after some time, even if that doesn't stop. If we eat the same kind of food although it is tasty, after some time we will find that it is not tasty anymore. So this is why going after pleasures doesn't make us happy. Happiness is a state of mind. That state of mind is different from the sensations that we get. And the other thing is, all pleasures are impermanent. So when we part from the pleasures, we become unhappy. That's the other thing about it. When we part from pleasures, we become unhappy. And the more we get addicted to pleasure, pain becomes more and more unpleasant. We cannot bear pain. That's another thing that happens. So, we cannot tolerate pain if we begin to desire pleasure all the time. That's another thing that happens. And when we have a desire, the moment the desire arises in the mind, we are unhappy. So pleasure is something that arouses the desire. And the moment the desire arises, we are unhappy because we don't have the pleasure that we desire. If we don't have the pleasure that we desire, then we become unhappy. And this unhappiness we don't like. And this is why we try to get what we desire. Why we act to get what we desire is because we are unhappy when we have the desire. And we don't have what we desire. So we might not be able to get it immediately when the desire arises. So we start working for it if we don't have money. For example, if we have a desire for a car or something like that, but we don't have the money to buy that car, then what we do is we'll have to work to find the money, and we work in order to get this. Now in this part of the world, there is an easy method that they have made. That is, you can get the car on a loan. So once you get the car on the loan, you will have to start working for it in order to pay back. So this is what keeps people working in this part of the world. Buy now and pay later. And then, but still, the work is not a pleasant thing. So we have to go on working. But the important thing is that we have to go through pain and discomfort in order to get that pleasure. And we go through that because we feel uncomfortable without the pleasure, and while working to get that pleasure, we go through discomfort also. And if after this effort to get the pleasure, we are not able to get it, even after working for it. If we are not able to get it, then again we will be unhappy as a result. But if we get what we want, we will be happy at that moment. How long are we going to be happy with that? We'll be happy for one day or maybe 2 days, and gradually that happiness disappears. Because new desires come up and again we become unhappy because of the new desires. And there is another thing that happens. What we have got, something happens to that. Like if you have got your car, then a small scratch coming in the car, it becomes unhappy, you become unhappy. And so you begin to protect it. And in order to protect what you have got, then again you'll have to go through a lot of trouble to protect what you have got. So you see, and ultimately, everything changes, everything breaks down, and we have to part from what we have got. And that is also producing unhappiness. So these are the different kinds of unhappiness that we get by going after pleasures. So, pleasure is not seen as something very pleasant. And the other thing is, however much we get, we'll never be satisfied. If you buy a car, after some time you begin to see other people having better cars, then you want to buy a better one. And then you buy that, then you will find that there are better things than that also, and then you keep on buying things. And then ultimately all these pleasures are really things that don't bring full satisfaction. This is why the Buddha says in one of the Gathas in the Dhammapada, I says, na kahapana vasena titti kame suvijyati appasada dukkha kama iti vinyaya pandito. Even what it means is, even if there is a rain of coins or money, like rain, if money begins to fall from the sky, even a single person will not be satisfied with that. You cannot satisfy even one person with all that money, because you want more money. That is what it means. Na kahapana vasena titti kamesu vijyati. You will never be content. And appasada dukkha kama. Kama means all these pleasures. And appasada, the pleasure you get from these things is very little. And there is more suffering in the pleasure. So this is the important thing. When people hear that the Buddha has been speaking about dukkha, people sometimes say the Buddha is pessimistic. Why? Because they think the Buddha is talking about the painful sensation, the unpleasant sensation. Because we experience two kinds of sensations, pleasant and unpleasant. So, people think the Buddha is pointing to the unpleasant sensation, not to the pleasant sensation. But the actual fact is, the Buddha is pointing to the pleasant sensation, not to the unpleasant sensation, and saying that the pleasant sensation is making us unhappy. This is the important thing to understand. So this is not pessimism. The painful sensation makes us unhappy when it is present. The pleasant sensation makes us unhappy when it is absent. So that means both pleasure and pain produce unhappiness. This is the important thing to understand. Now, if pleasure and pain are producing unhappiness, how can there be happiness? This is very important to understand. Happiness, we have to understand, is a state of mind. Normally, people think that the unhappiness that the Buddha spoke of was the unpleasant sensation, and the happiness that the Buddha spoke of was the pleasant sensation. That's not what the Buddha said. The unhappiness is the desire for the pleasant sensation and the hatred of the unpleasant sensation. That is the unhappiness. The unhappiness is the desire for the pleasant sensation and the hatred of the unpleasant sensation. And happiness is when the desire for the pleasant sensation is absent and the hatred of the unpleasant sensation is absent. That is the happiness. In other words, happiness is a state of mental calm, tranquility, the tranquility of mind. The mind that is not disturbed by pleasure or pain. That is the true happiness. That happiness will last long till you die, if you are able to maintain a mind that is not disturbed by attraction to pleasure or repulsion to pain. We are all the time disturbed, our mind is disturbed because we are attracted to pleasure and we are repelled by pain. This attraction and repulsion is a disturbance of the mind, and that disturbance is the unhappiness. So the happiness is the undisturbed mind. That's why the Buddha said, puttassa loka dhammehi chittam yassa nakampati asokam virajam kemam etam mangala muttamam. That means, the mind that is not disturbed by the changing vicissitudes of life. Vicissitudes are labha, alabha, ayasa, yasa, ninda, prasansa, sukha, dukkha. Labha is gain, alabha is loss. Yasa means recognition in society, and ayasa is non-recognition, you are not even cared for. Now that, those are things that change in life. Sometimes you gain, sometimes you lose, sometimes you are recognized in society, sometimes you are ignored. Praise and blame, sometimes you are praised, sometimes you are blamed for various things. So when these things happen, your mind is disturbed. Sometimes there is pleasure, sometimes there is pain. But if you can keep your mind unshaken by these changing vicissitudes of life, changing conditions, these are the Attaloka Dhamma, Attaloka Dhamma. That is the true happiness. Free from desires, free from anger, free from unhappiness, worries, anxieties. That is the real happiness. So this is very important to understand. So this true happiness, which is a purity of mind, purity, what is purity? The mind is impure when the mind is disturbed. Purity is when the mind is not disturbed. Every emotion is a disturbance of the mind, a desire is a disturbance of the mind. A hatred is a disturbance of the mind. Fear is a disturbance of the mind. Worry is a disturbance of the mind. So the mind that is not disturbed is the pure mind. Now this is the purpose of meditation. Meditation is to purify the mind. Now today meditation is understood as concentration. Concentration has nothing to do with meditation. This is a mistake made by some Westerners, really the British people, who studied Buddhism. And they went and spoke to the monks. And somehow they got the idea that meditation is concentration. It is mainly due to a mistake in translation. Samadhi, the word samadhi, has been translated as concentration. Samadhi doesn't mean concentration. You are familiar with the word sama, sama. Sama means it's equal, balance. Samadhi really means a balanced state of the mind. Mind is balanced because it's really the equilibrium. I call it the equilibrium. Now, if you have a balance, what you call a balance in English, if there is too much weight on one side, then it goes up. So, if you balance it, it will be equal. Now, that balancing of the mind is samadhi. The mind that is not disturbed, that's what it means. Without any desires, without any hatreds, without any fears, without worries, anxieties, that is the meaning of samadhi. So that state of samadhi is the happiness that Buddha pointed out. So by purifying the mind, we can enter that state of samadhi, which is the true happiness. The mind that is not disturbed. The purity and tranquility is the same thing. When the mind is pure, the mind is tranquil. So it is the tranquility of the mind that is samadhi, not concentration. Now if you begin to concentrate, what happens is you are making an effort there to concentrate. And when you make the effort to concentrate, you become tensed. The body becomes tensed, the muscles become tensed. And this is uncomfortable. Because it is uncomfortable, the body doesn't allow that to happen because it is uncomfortable. So the body itself begins to react to this. And what happens is, if you keep on concentrating for a while, automatically you go to sleep. And that sleep is not the ordinary sleep. That is what you call the hypnotic state. You enter the hypnotic state. Long time ago, there was a man in Europe called Frank Anton Mesmer. He began to produce the hypnotic state in people, and he was able to cure diseases. Hypnosis is possible to cure diseases because it works through what is called suggestion. The hypnotic state, we should understand that the hypnotic state is a kind of regression of the mind into a childhood state. The mind goes to a childhood state. Now the child is in a very passive state. The mother does everything for the child, and so the child simply allows the mother to do whatever is necessary, like bathing or washing or cleaning or whatever. And so, when a person enters that state, the critical faculty is lost. It's only when you become an adult, you begin to think and reason out and find out whether what someone says is correct or not correct, and whether what the other person does is good or bad. Now all that critical faculty where you begin to judge, that is lost when you enter the hypnotic state. And therefore, someone from outside can put in ideas into the mind. And when these ideas are put in, it is accepted. That is how the disease is cured. Because, you see, if you can hold in your mind the thought, now my ailments are all gone. If you have pain in your body, either legs or arms or your back or whatever, it is possible for you to cure that by thinking, my pain goes away. My pain is going. Now it's going. It's gone. Now if you can hold that thought in your mind, the pain will disappear. But the problem is, you cannot hold it in your mind. Why? Because your critical faculty is always working. How can the pain disappear like that? So a question arises. But when you enter the hypnotic state and someone tells you, now your pain is going, it's going, you accept it passively, without questioning. And because you accept it, it goes. That's how some of these churches, they say, due to the power of God, and they are doing these things. Very recently, I went to the Michigan Bihar temple, and there was a monk who had some pain in the stomach, and the doctors have been saying there is some problem with the intestines. He says, the doctor said it was called ulcerative colitis. And so, a monk came from somewhere else, and he said, I can cure this disease. And what he did was, he just held his hand and stroked over the body like this several times. And he said, now the disease is gone, don't worry. And then following day, he tells me, he's cured. That's how suggestion works. He became very receptive to that suggestion. So if it is accepted, the disease is cured. So in a similar way, Mesmer did this. And so many clients came, so many patients came to get treatment from Mesmer. But he had a different theory. He spoke of a thing called animal magnetism. He said, now you can magnetize a piece of iron. You take one magnet and then you stroke the piece of iron several times, then it becomes a magnet. So he says, in a similar way, you can magnetize a human being. And so he had this theory called animal magnetism, that is, an animal or a human being can be magnetized this way. And his body is already magnetized. So if he begins to stroke like this, the other person will be magnetized. So somehow he was able to cure diseases like this. And then gradually there were people who started criticizing this. And people said, well, this Mesmer is playing tricks on us. It's not true. So this was reported to the government, and then they appointed a committee to examine this. And the committee met and examined what he did, and ultimately declared that he was a trickster, that this is not genuine cures and that sort of thing, and he was playing tricks on people. And he was banned from that country, banished from the country, sent out. So Mesmer had to go out of the country and live somewhere else, and ultimately he died. After some time, there was a doctor in England called Dr. Braid. He became interested in this mesmerism, and so he went and examined all these reports of that committee, and ultimately he also tried some of these things, and he thought these people, ultimately, although they sent this man out of the country, what they discovered was correct. What they discovered was that this was all due to the imagination of people. And he said, imagination is correct, and it is by using imagination that you can cure the diseases. And so, he was the person who started what is called hypnosis. He was the person who coined the word hypnosis. And his method of producing the hypnotic state was to get a person to concentrate. So that is called Braid's method of hypnosis, was to get a person to concentrate. And when a person begins to concentrate on something, he goes to sleep, into the hypnotic state. And he found that by producing the hypnotic state, it is possible to cure diseases. So, these are things. I have been experimenting on those things also. Once there was a girl who came to the temple in Los Angeles long time ago, and the monk there told me that this girl had a problem. She had a cancer. She had a cancer in the uterus, and then she had been operated also several times, but still the cancer remains. And he asked me whether I can do something about this. So I said, I have never treated any cancer patients, but anyway I can try. So what I did was, I put her in the hypnotic state and got her to recall her past life, and then she had some bad experiences in the past as a child. So what I did was, while in the hypnotic state, I got her to practice metta bhavana. The real reason was, what I found was, that she hated herself for being a woman. So I thought the best way is to get her to meditate on metta. So I got her to meditate once a week. She came to see me, and every time I put her in this hypnotic state and got her to meditate. That is, she did this 7 weeks, 7 times. And after 7 weeks, she went to the doctor, and the doctor said, now there is no cancer. Cancer disappeared. And also, after some time she got married. Now she's having a son. And son is also now fairly grown up. And she's all right. So like that, it is possible to cure sicknesses. This way. The important thing is that concentration leads to the hypnotic state. That's what I was trying to explain. That concentration leads to the hypnotic state, but that is not samadhi. That doesn't produce the jhanas. The jhana is a pure state of the mind, which is free from emotions, The hypnotic state is not free from emotions. A person can be in the hypnotic state and be very emotional. The important thing is to understand that meditation is not concentration. I know so many meditation teachers who teach concentration. And not only that, those who go to meditate in that way, they begin to see various things, like they begin to see lights, or sometimes they see the Buddha, sometimes they see Mara also. So various things. One day there was I had to go to a university, Vermont University. And I was teaching a course there on Buddhism. And all these students used to come to me every day. We had a meditation session. So they used to come for meditation. And so I explained to them that meditation is not concentration. Should not concentrate. There was one girl who was studying to become an engineer, so she must have been an intelligent girl, mathematician and all that. So she had been meditating, and she told me that she was able to see some hallucination. Actually, I call it hallucination, that she could come out of the body and go about and come back again. So I said, this is a hallucination. You are getting hypnotized. In the hypnotic state, you can hallucinate like this. That is not real meditation. So this girl listened to this, but one day she comes alone and she tells me, can you hypnotize me? I said, yes. Well, I knew that it's very easy to hypnotize her because she was already hypnotized with the meditation. So I didn't have to do much to hypnotize her. She was about that distance from me, seated like that. So I said, look at my hand. And I just did this a few times. She got into the hypnotic state. So so I said, okay, now I'm going to take you to the moon. I'm going to bring the rocket here. Can you see the rocket? She said, yes, I can see the rocket. Okay, get into the rocket. Now it'll start going. And so you must tell me, describe what you see when you are going in this rocket. So she started describing how the earth became smaller and smaller gradually, and then she could see the moon becoming larger because it's getting close to the moon. And I said, well, now it will land on the moon. And so it landed on the moon, and then I said, now you can get out and walk on the moon. So she got out of the rocket and started walking. I said, now when you walk, you see the American flag. I asked, can you see the American flag? She said, yes, yes. Now you go and salute the American flag. So she selected, and then I said, walk further, you are going to see a yogi. And so I said, do you see the yogi? Yes, yes. Now speak to him. And so she spoke to the yogi also. And I said, okay, now you go further, you are going to see Jesus Christ. And she went and saw Jesus. I said, you ask him some questions. And so she asked some questions and Jesus answered. I said, okay, now you go further, you are going to see the Buddha. And she, did you? I asked, she saw the Buddha. He said, yes. And she spoke to the Buddha also. I said, okay, now you come back. Now come and get into the rocket again. We have to go back.